We're here at the North Carolina Swine Health Seminar with Beringer Ingelheim. With me is Steve Meyer, Paragon Economics. And Steve, you gave a good presentation today with an overview of where the markets are today, what the crops look like, and what that means for hog producers. First of all, let's just talk about the condition of the corn and soybean crops. You said they were the best you've ever seen, and I know I drove through Missouri a couple of weeks ago, and I said the same thing. I have never seen the crops look like that.
Yeah, and they look like that just about everywhere. I mean, there are a few spots, and we had a few places of hail damage, and I was in west central Minnesota last week. It didn't look great, but I'm not sure it ever looks great there. You know, it's not. So, I mean, it just looks very good. Crop condition ratings are about as high as they've been in many years, and so we're looking at a great crop. We've had very favorable weather conditions. If anything, it's been a little cool in the Corn Belt, but I'd take cool over heat just about any day, and we've had sufficient moisture. This crop is really progressing. About the only cloud hanging over the crop, really, is it was planted just a little bit late, so there is a little bit of threat of a frost, an early frost, but you know, based on history, the 2 years we're comparing to right now are 1994 and 2004, and in those cases, the final yield got 10 or 12 bushels larger than the August estimate on corn. So my guess is that this crop's going to get bigger before we put it in the bin, and if that's the case, then we're going to have much lower cost of production.
Well, and that, as far as the prices are concerned, right now we're looking at some pretty good prices for livestock producers.
We are across the board again there, and there's several factors of that. One of them is these losses of pigs to PEDV this year has shortened hog supplies some, but we've made up for most of that with heavier weights. The real driving factor has been demand. Demand has been excellent for both beef and pork. We've had large year-over-year increases in demand, and that's come back. People are willing to pay larger prices for this product. You know, some underlying things about, you know, less concern about fat, cholesterol, an understanding that what we thought about fat and cholesterol back in the 70s and 80s was pretty much wrong, it looks like. A lot more concern about carbohydrates. So some fundamental changes in consumer tastes and preferences that we think has got legs and going to be here for a while.
Well, and also the feed availability and the prices of feed are about as good as you could expect.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're not going back to $2 corn and $180 bean meal, but, you know, we're at the lowest levels on cost that we've been in 5 years. And so, I mean, it's just and we're not increasing corn usage for ethanol every year like we were. It's pretty much flat. It'll grow a little bit, but not much. And we can probably keep up with that with trend yield growth on corn. We've kind of caught up on the soybean thing. We were very tight stocks last year and this year on soybeans. USDA says we're going to triple those by the end of next year. And so it's just, and we're in a lot better place from a cost standpoint. We're in a lot better place from a demand standpoint. Now, we're going to get some expansion, and eventually we're going to get supply that's going to eat all this up probably, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. And so it's going to be a very good year for pork producers, a couple years. It's going to be a very good 2 or 3 years for cattle producers, especially cow-calf operators too.
Well, speaking of ethanol, a few years ago, livestock producers were pretty upset about ethanol production. And like all supply demand, it almost seems like we're working itself out. How do you feel about it now, about whether livestock production and ethanol production can coexist?
Well, they've always been able to coexist. The trouble is that our policy decisions forced ethanol production to increase at a rate that was not sustainable. It went too fast. We could, you know, we're always growing. The trend yield on corn is up about 2 bushels per year. Well, if you had grown the ethanol business at a rate equivalent to that, I wouldn't have been able to gripe too much about it. But it was far faster than that, and it caused a huge dislocation of corn from livestock to ethanol, and the economic impact of this was very negative for producers. So this isn't an issue of whether we produce ethanol. This is an issue of whether we produce that we've had subsidized, mandated ethanol, and the rate of change in those government programs were way wrong from what we could do physically on the ground. Had they just had some thought here and matched this up to the rate at which we could have increased our production of corn, I wouldn't have had a whole lot of gripes about it. I mean, as I tell, you know, people in the corn business, I don't hate ethanol. I don't like subsidized mandated ethanol when I'm the alternative user of the input.
So you think, what do you think about the RFS the way it is right now? I mean, do you think it should continue or do you think it should go away?
No, I think it should go away. I mean, we've thrown billions of dollars at this industry already. It ought to have to stand on its own now. And it has a place in the fuel business as an oxygenant, as an oxygen and as an octane enhancer. It's not going away from there. I don't think they're going back to MTBE or anything like that because there's some negatives involved there. In my opinion, like I say, we've thrown enough taxpayer money at this. It ought to have to stand on its own.
Well, thank you very much, Steve, here at the BIVI North Carolina Swine Health Seminar. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.